RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the December 11th, 2019 edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Foyd, and this week's edition of the show is powered by Mack Weldon. And later on in the show, we're going to tell you about the special offer that Mack Weldon has for the MMA Report Podcast listener. But a majority of this week's show will be about Saturday's UFC 245, as we're going to preview everything that's going to go down on Saturday night in Las Vegas. Also, you're going to hear my conversation with Ian Heinisch, who fights a part of the TV preliminary card. He's going to be taking on Omari Akhmedov. Had a chance to catch up with him last week, so you hear my conversation with Ian Heinisch. Also, we're going to talk about the UFC releasing Liz Carmouche, the reaction to it, and everything related to that. Also, we're going to talk about this interview that I stumbled across on Twitter from the PFL co-founder Don Davis, and we're going to rate the most outrageous comments that were made in this interview. And then, of course, we're going to wrap up the show by discussing what happened last week at the UFC DC main event, where Alistair Overeem was just a couple of seconds away from a victory. And then, he had to get plastic surgery on his lip. So we'll talk about that. But Daniel, it is fight week for the UFC, UFC 245, the final pay-per-view of 2019. And, this is one of those pay-per-views that you're excited to sit in front of the television set on Saturday night and watch these fights.
Sound the alarm, Jason. We've got ourselves something to invite the friends over for. We got ourselves a solid UFC pay-per-view. I'm excited, man. You know, I had this one friend. His name is Trey. And I was like, we were best friends in elementary, best friends in middle school. And we found each other on Facebook not too long ago, and we learned that we were MMA fans. It's been 3 or 4 months, right? And so we're like, dude, we got to get together and watch a UFC card. But there really hasn't been too many great UFC cards to start the gathering. You know, we've had a couple. But I think this is the one. This is the one, Jason. This is the card. It's good enough. I can invite my friend Trey, invite some of my other friends. When I look at UFC 245, I'm really excited because this is the type of card I can order, invite 3 or 4 friends over, and I know they're going to have a good time for the entire main card.
Oh, I mean, not just the main card. I mean, the TV prelims. There's two fights in those TV prelims that, to me, I just can't see how these fights don't deliver, and that being Jeff Neal versus Mike Perry and Matt Brown versus Ben Saunders. But even you look at the early prelims on Fight Pass and ESPN Plus, we got the official UFC debut of Chase Hooper, who had been on that development deal, taking on Daniel Taymor. You look at, Puna Soriano making his official UFC debut, another Contender Series winner. That's someone that I'm interested to see their UFC debut. But yeah, man, it's a great fight card, you know, top to bottom. Of course, you got the three title fights, and also we got Jose Aldo going down to 135 pounds, which I feel very bad about, because you've seen some of these pictures, and apparently the UFC is fine with what his weight is this week. But I would have never thought Jose Aldo going down to 35. I always would have thought of him going up to 55 pounds. Plus you got, Peter Yan, Uriah Faber, as well. Let's just like kind of start off there. Who has a better chance to win, Jose Aldo or Uriah Faber? Because I don't know if I like either one of them to win.
I definitely don't like either one of them to win. I'll start the question by answering the fighter I want to win is Uriah Faber. I really hope that he continues to have a late career renaissance. Honestly, for the UFC's sake, if Uriah Faber pieces together one last run for a championship opportunity, that to me is a very marketable pay-per-view. He has always done real well when it comes to drawing an audience. Just as a fan, I want to see the California kid win. But when I look at these matchups, I feel as though Aldo has a much better chance of getting a victory. When I look at Aldo last fight, to me, he still is closer to his prime than Faber is to his prime. He still has the ability and by closer, I don't mean he's near that. I just feel like Faber is at a bigger gap. And not only that, when you compare the primes of both athletes, Aldo was the better fighter. So he was already starting off at a better distance. So that's why I'm going with Aldo he does have the tougher matchup in Marlon Moraes, who, again, is an absolute killer. But I think Peter Yan, I mean, he's absolutely wowed and impressed me, especially his last two fights. And I feel as though Aldo has a slight better chance, potentially by making the fight somewhat boring against Moraes. If we see a more tactical approach and a cautious approach, that could be a way he could score a decision on the stand-up. So in terms of who I feel more comfortable pulling off the upset, it's Aldo. With that being said, Jason, I mean, the picks are simple for those two bantamweight bouts, in my opinion. It's Moraes. It's Peter Yan. For you, are you differing than me on this deal?
No, I'm not differing at all. I mean, I think the question is, will both those fights go the distance, or will we see Moraes or Peter Yan go out there and get the stoppage? I mean, you know, my thing with when it comes to Jose Aldo is just, what's he going to look like on the scale? And I think that's the question that all of us have, is what will he look like? And I really don't know the answer to that one. You know, Uriah Faber, I mean, they're throwing him into the deep end. And you know, I kind of feel like this is kind of one of those fights of, you know, people may not like it, but if Uriah wins, I wouldn't be shocked if they throw him right in there against Henry Cejudo.
Oh, he could find himself on that Dan Henderson trajectory. When I think Dan Henderson, I don't even know if he won a fight. I think he just looked the right direction. They're like, damn, he's back at it. Let's put him in the title picture. Like Faber, yeah. When you have that name cachet, you have the ability to cut the line. A win over Peter Yan would be like, damn. I mean, he absolutely impressed the hell out of me with his victory over Jimmy Rivera. Mm-hmm. And that was like, damn, this guy is a top tier bantamweight. So if Faber is able to go from that victory he had over Ricky Simon to beat Peter Yan, it tells me everything I need to know in terms of whether or not Faber has re-elevated his game and is at a championship level. And I do think at the end of the day, when you're the UFC and you have a very, very few amount of fights that really, really register for a wide audience, any opportunity you have to justify making a fight that just might do that, that's why guys like Uriah Faber are going to cut the line. So I definitely could see Uriah Faber getting a title shot with the win here.
I mean, but those first two fights, it's the appetizer, but, you know, for those final three fights, three title fights, you got Amanda Nunes defending with a 135-pound title against Jermaine De Romandamé. I think for maybe newer MMA fans may not realize this is actually a rematch where they fought back in 2013 for at a UFC Fight for the Troops event where Amanda won in the opening round. Then, of course, it'll be Max Holloway versus Alexander Volkanovski. And then, of course, the main course, it is Kamaru Usman versus Colby Covington. You know, maybe one of the, you know, for me, kind of, I am really interested in Usman and Covington. And, you know, obviously everyone knows kind of the back and forth these guys have had for, I mean, damn, it seems like over 2 years. And finally, this one is taking place. And, you know, I think, you know, to me, like, you know, we always talk about, we'll do like things where we say buy or sell on this podcast, and you say buy or sell Kamaru Usman is a better fighter. To me, there's no question. The answer is I'm buying that.
Yeah, I am buying that too. And the reason why I'm buying the fact that Kamaru Usman is a better fighter than Colby Covington, it's pretty simple. When these guys go to Home Depot, in the shopping cart, Kamaru Usman has quite a few more tools than Colby Covington. It's as simple as that. He has that well-rounded nature where he's really excelled at times on the feet against guys where it's like, damn, that's impressive. From the early portion of his UFC career, the fight-to-fight advancement with his skill set was what really impressed me with Kamaru Usman. So I am buying that as well, that Kamaru Usman is the better fighter. But Jason, that to me is still not answering the question on whether or not who will come out of this fight as the champion.
That's what I'm saying. Buyer selling, Kamaru Usman will walk out the UFC welterweight champion. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to sell it. I think Colby Covington gets it done. And I'll get your thought and I'll kind of elaborate on why I think Colby Covington gets the job done.
Yeah, man. I like it. This is exciting. This is a really big time main event. And I'm hyped for it. I don't necessarily think when you look at the pre-fight hype, it certainly resonated with people the same way Covington against another name would have. Covington really plays the accelerant in terms of you have an established fighter who people care about, and Colby Covington can go up against him and really, really chastise him, really, really get after him in the media, and it will really get you wanting to buy a ticket to watch him get his butt whooped. I don't know if Usman is bringing people to the TV set, the pay-per-view set, so it's not the biggest fight in the world. But as an MMA fan, watching these two guys compete, watching these two guys look dominant at times against some really good fighters, I'm hyped for it and I'm excited. I tentatively will buy this, though. We will differ on the main event. I do think Usman leaves UFC 245 with the championship still around his waist. And it's something I go back and forth on. Colby Covington knows exactly what he's going to do, and he's going to be trying to do that for every second of that fight, and he's damn good at it as a wrestler. Usman is as well, but the persistence and the high volume from Colby Covington may be just enough, but I'm still going back to the fact that Usman, to me, has the ability to adjust and do more things than Covington, and I do think absolutely Kamaru Usman is going to drop one or two rounds in this fight. I think the deal for Usman is going to be the recovery. Once he gets taken down and he's on his back for a bit, his ability to scramble back up to his feet, do really well on the stand up, and just make sure he employs his own game plan and not allowing Covington to dictate it. So I'm buying that Usman retains the championship. Why are you selling that, Jason?
Well, look, I'm not going to say I feel uber confident in saying one side's going to win this fight or not. You know, one of the things that we talk about things that we know heading into a fight, and then there's things we don't know. You know, one of the things that I feel like I don't know is, has Colby's talk gotten into the head of Kamar Usman? You know, if you think back to that, you know, the press conference he had a couple months ago where they're doing the stare down and Usman takes his shirt off, and you know, that kind of leads you to think that maybe Colby has got in his head, you know, and could that potentially have an effect on the fight to where all of a sudden, you know, the game plan that you know, Hard Knocks 365 has put in for Kamaru Usman, that he gets away for it, you know, for example, that Usman, you know, starts seeking a knockout and Colby's able to take advantage of it. I think there's no question. We all know Kamaru Usman has the power advantage in this fight. Now, he also does have a reach advantage. How well will he be able to use that reach? But how is he going to be able to handle the pressure of Colby Covington? I mean, the act that he has, that, you know, he did an interview on Candace Owens' show where he talked about kind of what kind of changed everything for him, which I do believe there's a lot of belief into that. But also, like, hey, Colby, don't come out and just say that you decided to put this act on so people cared about you. But the thing is I could see where Colby Covington loses rounds one, loses rounds two, but then he starts to wear down Kamaru Usman because of his pace. I mean, Kamaru Usman, and this is pretty much everyone in the UFC welterweight division, they've never gone against somebody who brings the pace that Colby Covington has. So that's the thing that I kind of, you know, I do wonder about, you know, because I do believe this fight is going to go 25 minutes. I do not see a stoppage coming in on either side of this fight. But I do wonder, will that pace wear down Kamaru Usman? And that we're looking at a 48-47 win for Colby Covington.
Yeah, I think the mental warfare you mentioned is one hell of a point. I mean, that is an advantage Colby Covington has against a lot of guys heading into the cage. The comments that he says are so outrageous and outlandish, it's hard not to get an emotional reaction. I mean, this guy, Colby Covington, is playing a game where he is just the human troll. He will say whatever word combination he thinks will get a reaction. And if you're a fighter, it's real easy to buy into that, make a mistake, and feed into the opponent's game plan. The pace is the big thing that I'm worried about for Kamaru Usman. I think he is going to be successful early on in that first round when it comes to shucking off the wrestling of Covington. But you're right. As that fight progresses and it continues, the rain continues to pour with Covington's attempts, he could start to pierce Usman's defense, catch him off guard, and, key point, tire him out. It is tiring to out-wrestle a guy. And to do it into championship rounds is a difficult deal. Like you, I see this going the distance. This is a razor-thin fight. Usman's my pick. Look, if I'm the UFC, I want Colby Covington to win this fight because I want to promote Colby Covington versus Jorge Masvidal. I mean, that to me is the big money fight in the welterweight division I can do. And the championship picture, that friendship turned ruined. And to me, Covington-Masvidal, Jason, like, that's the fight to make in the championship picture. But I don't think the UFC will have a chance to do it.
I mean, look, if you watch the countdown show, it to me, you know, sitting there and watching it, and when they were, you know, previewing this fight, to me, it definitely felt like there was more of an emphasis on Colby Covington. And you know, kind of to piggyback off something you said there, I mean, yes, Colby Covington is one of the most hated fighters in the UFC because of how he has promoted himself over the last 2 years. But you have to accept that this guy is a talented fighter, and we have seen what his pace has done to other fighters that he's gone up against. It should be noted that they do have three common opponents: Damian Maia, Rafael Dos Anjos, and Warley Alves. Usman won all those fights by decision. Colby lost to Alves via submission and scored decisions win over Dos Anjos and Maia. And of course, we think about the wrestling, and I think that's kind of like, you know, who's got the better wrestling in this one. And for Kamaru Usman, he has not been taken down in the UFC. Three fighters have attempted to take him down. Woodley went for one takedown attempt. Dos Anjos went for one. And Damian Maia went for 15. Now, Usman has 42 takedowns in UFC competition, while Colby Covington has 67. You know, and I can't help but think of, you know, because of both of their grappling abilities, is the fact of, are we looking at a 25-minute kickboxing matchup between these two guys?
I don't think so. I think we're going to see a lot of kickboxing from Usman, but this is going to be all over the place. I really think we are going to have a back-and-forth fight. And the fourth for Covington means we aren't watching K1 because if we are, I feel very confident that Usman's going to win. I mean, sure, maybe the threat of wrestling will kind of paralyze the offensive output from Usman. But when you look at the slight, you know, the 4-inch reach advantage for Usman, I think we're going to see a fight that is both on the ground and on the feet in different rounds here. And I mean, the question is, how long is this fight card going to be? We have three championship fights. You know, we have two fights that might go the distance to start off. We might have ourselves a long fight night if all of these fights go the distance. I don't think that will be the case. But, I mean, when I look at this main event, I would be stunned if this one in particular doesn't go 25 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at, you know, the two of the three title fights, and you know, the second one, meaning the featherweight title fight, it wouldn't be surprised if co-main event and main event both go, you know, the distance of, you know, Max Holloway defending the featherweight title against Alexander Volkanovski. And one of the crazy stats that I pulled up this week, and I could not believe this, Daniel, when I saw it, is the fact that if I, you know, walk into, I'll be in Detroit, Michigan this Saturday, this weekend, as the Bucks play the Lions up there. And if I go into a bar that's showing these fights, if I went to 10 people, how many of them would believe when I say, hey, you know, Volkanovski may be 5'6" and, you know, Max Holloway is 5'11", but Alexander Volkanovski is going to have a 2-inch reach advantage. How many people would believe me?
No one. They would think you were smoking crack. I mean, hell, you talked to me before the podcast. You asked me, and I didn't believe you. I didn't know. I mean, I believe you, but that's outrageous for a fight. I mean, it's just it belies belief, and it's a very important factor because, I mean, we've seen Holloway utilize that reach to have plenty of success in the UFC, and for Volkanovski, I mean, that allows him to set the edge in this fight in particular.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting fight because, you know, one of the things about both these guys are volume punchers. You know, when you look at their strikes land per minute, you know, we always talk about that with Max Holloway, where it's 6.78 strikes per minute. It's 6.11 for Alexander Volkanovski. And, you know, it's one of these things, and I can't help but think of this is, you know, I think for the most part, we kind of sit here and say, oh, you know, Holloway's going to retain his title. But I do wonder, because of the fact of, you know, when Max fights, it's not like he's going in there and he's fighting in the first round. I mean, this guy is going 4 and 5 rounds. It seems like every time out in these title fights, you do wonder, does there become a point where that does take a toll? I mean, obviously, Volkanovski has got the power, but, you know, when I think about, you know, some of the fights that Holloway has had, it's like he's able to just basically say, hey, Frankie, you want to take me down? Cool. Ain't going to happen. And I kind of feel like this is going to be a fight where I think Max, you know, the smart thing for him would be to fight at range here and not try to get into a firefight. But, you know, that's kind of, you know, Max is going to do that. I mean, my pick is Max Holloway in the fight. But if you sit there and say Alexander Volkanovski walks out UFC featherweight champion, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, I mean, not to step a talking point we kind of talked about maybe having, and that talking point being which guy, if we're going to see a new champion, which one would it be? And then, of course, your answer is Covington. My answer would be Volkanovski, even though I'm picking all three champions to retain. And I do think the main event and co-main event are razor thin. I feel as though Volkanovski and Holloway is closer than the main event. And again, these two fights are very, very similar in terms of how I would put the betting odds. Man, Volkanovski to me has just looked like a man possessed with his last three performances against Elkins. In particular, the Chad Mendes fight really, really, really was a wake up call for me that, all right, this dude's time is now. And he looked damn good against Aldo. I'm picking Holloway. For me, I've seen Holloway more consistently fight against these elite fighters and look damn great doing it. You know, he did go up in weight to take on Poirier. He dropped that fight, but that's kind of a scratch for me. But you mentioned the wear and tear, and that's a big deal. Max Holloway has been a part of championship level fights for like 3.5 years since he competed for the interim title against Anthony Pettis. And being a part of the big show takes a lot out of you. Every fight camp, every fight, all the pressure, it's hard to hold on to that magical moment of being the top guy in the division. It has an extreme wear and tear. And we've also seen Holloway go through a couple of injury deals. I'm concerned about that wear and tear. Fortunately, this is a very, very youthful guy. Just now entering, he's just about to, he just now entering year 28 for him. And for Holloway, I feel more comfortable sleeping at night picking him because I've seen him in these dog fights against guys, even guys with similar frames, you know, thinking back to Frankie Edgar, even though the reach is bigger for Volkanovski. So Holloway to me is just the more known quantity in terms of having these absolute bangers of a fight. But this is going to be a banger of a fight. This to me is the absolute favorite to be the fight of the night. There's going to be a lot of intense exchanges. When you have those exchanges, you got to look at the power guy to potentially get that shot in and put away the champion. But this is a night where I see all three champions retaining their titles, and Holloway is one of those.
Yeah, I mean, I'm picking Holloway as well, and I think pretty much everyone's going to pick Amanda Nunes in her fight against Jermaine de Romandamé. I mean, I think the question with that fight is, you know, will Amanda, you know, try to get this fight to the ground, or will she have a striking matchup with Jermaine, which is obviously, the path to victory for Jermaine. Now, here on Wednesday, the UFC put out a press release that some numbers on Amanda Nunes, which they call the GOAT, and this was Dana White's quote saying, quote, "Amanda Nunes has accomplished what nobody else has accomplished. It's not just who she beat, but how she beat them. When you talk about Holly Holm, Valentina Shevchenko, Miesha Tate, Ronda Rousey, Chris Cyborg, and potentially Jermaine de Romande twice, she is holding two belts at the same time, defending them both at the same time, and cleaning out all the former champions. One of the most feared fighters ever, Chris Cyborg, is actually the fastest knockout in women's featherweight history. She knocked out Cyborg in 51 seconds. She is by far one of the greatest mixed martial arts of all time, and definitely the greatest female fighter of all time." And that was Dana White. And of course, they put out all these various numbers, but the number that really sticks out to you when it comes to Amanda Nunes is the number 6, and that is current, former, or future UFC champions that she has defeated throughout her career, which is a very crazy number. I mean, I just, you know, to me, Jermaine's got to keep this fight on the feet, but I would expect Amanda Nunes to go out there and get the win. But the fact that the UFC putting press releases out there calling her the GOAT, man, you're tempting the MMA gods.
You are, man. It's the first one in a while where they said it and it's actually true. Yeah, the first two fights we talked about, razor thin. This one, not so much. Look, if Jermaine de Romandamé pulls off the upset, holy moly, that to me is just a dramatic upset. I mean, de Romandamé has done really well for herself, but the gap between Amanda Nunes and just every female in the sport is, I mean, bigger than my gap to you before I put braces on, Jason. I mean, this is the ninth wonder of the world. Amanda Nunes is the GOAT. She's unbelievable. She's dominant, and she's fought the best in the world, and she's made them look like, mediocre. I think she's going to bring down de Romandamé. rain down punches and get a first round victory. I think this will be a very entertaining fight for those watching this at home. If Nunez ever falls, it's going to be a big moment. She's the most dominant champion in the UFC currently. And I think that dominance will reign. And this will be the for sure finish we get on the UFC 245 card.
You know, she said earlier today that, you know, her plan is to defend that featherweight title next. You have to imagine Mika Anderson, you know, would be the opponent because, well, I don't know if there really is any other options out there for her. Now, when, you know, we talked right at the beginning of the show, the prelims, there's some good prelim fights. The two fights that ultimately stick out to me just because I think that there's going to be fun fights to watch, and that's Jeff Neal, Mike Perry, Matt Brown, and Ben Saunders. You know, I'm, you know, picking Jeff Neal, but I mean, look, he can get into a firefight and Mike Perry could easily knock him out. I'm picking Matt Brown versus Ben Saunders. But man, if you tell me Ben Saunders wins, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, Ben Saunders definitely. I think Ben Saunders, Matt Brown is just a phenomenal fight. I mean, two fighters we have spent a lot of time watching. And the thing with that fight is I think they're going to put themselves in a situation where it's going to be, you know, back and forth, and one guy could get rocked and the other guy who's rocked ends up getting the knockout. Like, I could absolutely see that happening where it just becomes an absolute firefight. So, I mean, look, I'm going to Brown in that pick. That fight itself is just a really fun fight. It doesn't really matter too much in the long-term scheme of things. Both these guys are absolutely on the back nine, but we can definitely celebrate both these guys. I think it's a great fight. I mean, Perry, Jeff Neal is just another fight. Both these guys guaranteed excitement. And for Jeff Neal, I mean, he's the one where the momentum is swinging his direction. Mike Perry is incredibly skilled. I'm going to Jeff Neal. I mean, the other fights that really excite me, and there's quite a few interesting fights, but the two that I would point at, or I guess the three, let's talk about the other two ESPN2 fights. First, Omari Akhmedov and Ian Heinisch is a nice middleweight contest that I think will just be an entertaining one in terms of slobber knocker potential. And then Irene Adanya is a fairly talented fighter going up against Caitlin Vieira, who looked real good in her win over Kat Zingano. I think that's a solid women's bantamweight fight where it means a lot in that division. And then the fight on the prelims I'm hyped for, and there's a couple on the early prelims, but the one in particular is Brandon Moreno versus Kai Kara France. I mean, Brandon Moreno is just incredibly skilled. He's hit a big time skid in terms of his last four performances, but he's still really impressed me since his initial Ultimate Fighter season. And he's going up against a guy who's 3-0 in the UFC and pretty talented in Kai Kara France. So, you know, I think you can't pick the wrong fight. I think the best fight on the prelims, though, is the Jeff Neal Mike Perry contest.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Yeah, I do. I mean, that Caitlin Vieira matchup, Irene Adanya, is a fight definitely, you know, you talk about, you know, kind of under radar fights. I think that's definitely an under radar fight to kind of pay attention to. I do like Ian Heinisch to get the win. You know, I'm interested to see Chase Hooper. I do like that Moreno Kai Kara France matchup as well. You know, I think we talked about this last week. The fact of Jessica Eye, you know, obviously we all know what happened in her last fight, getting brutally KO'd. You know, against Shevchenko, but she's now in the second fight of the night taking on Vivian Araújo. She's actually the betting underdog in that fight. That to me smells of a Jessica Eye split decision win. Like, to me, it just has that kind of written all over it. I do like Puna Soriano to get a stoppage win in the opening fight of the night. Just kind of going down, I'll go from top to bottom with my picks. I'm going to go Soriano, Eye, Cara France, Hooper, Brown, Heinisch, Vieira, Neal, Jan, Moraes, Nunez, Holloway, and I'm going to go Covington. I'm not saying I feel great about the pick, Daniel, but I'm going to go with Colby.
Yeah, man, I've got Soriano winning. I got Araujo beating Jessica Eye. I've got Cara France. I've got Chase Hooper over Daniel Tamer, Matt Brown, Heinisch, Adanya, Jeff Neal, Jan, Moraes, Nunez, Holloway, and we differ on the main event. Usman's my pick, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple of fights in this car when I was going down and kind of making my picks that were kind of, you know, it was, you know, kind of a coin flip play. The main event, you know, look, my whole thought process is the pace. I mean, the other fights that kind of I was like, oh man, which way do I want to go? You know, Vieira Adanya was one of those fights. You know, Brown and Saunders was one of those fights. I and Araújo was another one of those fights. You know, with the Saunders, Matt Brown, if Ben Saunders wins that fight, I just feel like it's going to be a kick to the body that leads to the finish.
Yeah, I can definitely see how you envision that for sure. I mean, if we're talking about visions, I think, man, I'm going to go out on a limb, Jason. I'm going to envision, even though I picked Peter Yan, I'm going to envision California Kid, Uriah Faber, guillotine choke first round. That's my vision. It differs in my pick, but it's a vision. I just got possessed and I'm going Faber, guillotine choke.
Yeah,
Alpha Male special.
And you got to imagine Henry Cejudo may be the biggest Uriah Faber fan on Saturday night because obviously that would be a pretty notable fight for him if that is a route they want to go. But yeah, looking forward to UFC 245. Of course, one of those fighters that's going to be a part of that preliminary card is Ian Heinisch. I had a chance to catch up with him last week. Going to play you that conversation here. And then after we come back, we're going to tell you about that special offer that Mack Weldon has for the MMA Report podcast listener. We'll talk about the UFC release. Liz Carmouche, comments made by the PFL co-founder, and also we're going to talk about what happened last week at UFC DC. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is man's going to be part of UFC 245. So that's back inside the octagon. It's Ian Heinisch. And I appreciate it, Tom. I was watching an interview you did with James, and one of the things that kind of stuck out to me about that interview is you talked about fight week. And of course, last time we saw you was on a pay-per-view fight week, and that was your first UFC pay-per-view. Like, what was your big takeaway from the differences of a fight night week as opposed to a pay-per-view week?
I mean, yeah, it's just, the media is insane. You got all your media obligations, especially I was on the main card and just everything about it, man. The Dana talk, just seeing all like these idols that you looked up to there and now you're there getting to compete with them. And just so many fans came out for that just because it was such a big card. They want to see you, but they also are fans of the UFC. So I had a huge fan base there and, I was kind of leaking energy out in places that I shouldn't have. And I learned a lot from that week. And coach and I went back to the drawing board and talked about it. And we're going to tighten up some things for this next fight week coming up.
Like in terms of just the fight, was there one particular thing you took away from it that you and Coach Montoya realized, this is the major thing we have to work on?
Yeah, absolutely. There wasn't like one huge thing. It was just a bunch of little things that added up to become a big thing. And it was a lot of, first off, I wasn't feeling good that week. And I had this mindset. I was just going to go out and knock Brunson out. These vet guys at the top level, you got to be patient, man. When you rock them and stuff, which I did early in the first round, you got to kind of be patient and sit back and find your shot, instead of rush in there, expel a bunch of energy, kind of waste a bunch of energy. A lot of energy was wasted all that week and through that fight. And on top of that, I wasn't feeling good. So I pride myself in being one of the best cardio machines in the UFC. And, it showed in my other fights, but it definitely didn't show in that fight. And I'm going to tighten some things up and I'm going to come out strong next Saturday.
Unfortunately, we couldn't see back in October injury force you out of that fight, but you get a quick turnaround here. Recover from that injury. What was the hardest part for you of being injured, pulling out a fight, and also understanding that, look, I've got to let my body, get back to where it is. I mean, obviously, I know you've talked about kind of what ultimately led you out of that. Was it something that it was just kind of like, okay, I need to sit back and take care of things in a better way?
It was, it was a hard thing because, injuries, we can always work around. You hurt your ankle, you tape it up, hurt your shoulder, you throw one hand. You hurt your knee, you box, like there's always ways to work around it. But when you have a concussion, there's nothing you can really do to work around it except do light cardio. And I tried to push through it a few times, stupidly, and it just made things worse and it made it longer, the recovery a lot longer than it should have had to been. And so, yeah, that was tough. That's just tough to happen to sit idle. I had to just leave and go on vacation just to get away from everything because it was just stressful. Sitting in traffic here, it was cold here. I just needed to be with nature. And I went out to Mexico for a week and just laid on the beach and kind of let nature heal me and just got some time by myself.
Don't I recall like Mexico's like your go-to getaway spot?
Yeah, absolutely. I love the Caribbean Ocean, the beach and everything about that. I love all the other islands too. It's just so easy and accessible from Denver. You get a one-way ticket, fly right into Cancun. My buddy picks me up, and, you know, it's cheap, it's affordable, and I speak Spanish fluent. So it's a good time down there.
When did you learn how to speak Spanish?
When I was locked up in prison in Spain.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, I remember taking Spanish in high school, and like, I struggled. Yeah. It's one of those things I just couldn't do.
Yeah, absolutely. I took a bunch of Spanish too, and I didn't know any words when I got out to Spain. And, it's kind of a thing that you have to be around every day, practicing it, immersed in the culture, speaking it every day on a daily basis, trying to watch movies in it and stuff like that. Then you're going to actually learn that language.
Do sometime you want to teach your coaches how to speak it so that the other corner maybe doesn't know what you guys are working on?
We speak a whole different language. We have code words for all kinds of stuff. So yeah, we got our own language for sure. But yeah, it's kind of funny because my coach is Latino. He's Mexican or part Mexican, and he doesn't speak any Spanish, and I'm this white boy speaking Spanish. So we always joke about that.
Oh, my wife is half Spanish, and her father obviously talks Spanish. She, nothing. No Spanish at all. So, yeah. No, I know what you mean there. One of the things we always hear in the fight game is you, and I know you've talked about this, of why you love the fight, and you've mentioned about, you know, knockout is a way you see this fight, ultimately ending for yourself. Is there something about Omari's game that is why you believe the knockout will present itself?
You know, it's nothing about his game. And I this whole camp and this whole fight, I'm not focusing on my opponent at all. I really don't care. Like, my coach was in the corner for his last fight, fighting Zach Cummings, my teammate. So I've let him just prepare me, man. I'm focused on myself. I learned so much last fight. If I implement my game plan, if I'm patient and let the knockout come instead of trying to force it, it's going to happen. I'm excited to get my first finish in the UFC, and I'm excited to – you know, steal the show or part of it, at least on such a big card. I'm honored to be on such big cards this year. And, you know, I didn't get to showcase my skills last time, and this time I'm coming out. I feel like I have something to prove. I have a chip on my shoulder, and, you know, I've just learned so much. I'm focused on me. I'm going to fight my style, my game. And I feel just the finish is going to come.
Do you feel like you've put too much emphasis on your opponent's abilities more than your own abilities?
Yeah, you can do that. You know, you can kind of like look into your opponent. What is he good at? And then you're overthinking. If you're ever thinking in the cage, a coach once told me, you're wrong. So don't think, just react. And I feel, you know, I kind of, you know, all these interviews too, man, you're just repeatedly asked, how are you going to fight Derek Brunson? And Brunson only lost to Israel and Jacare and these guys. And, you know, so that kind of starts to get to your head a little bit. So I'm just totally focused on myself. Focused on what I'm going to do. I'm focused on the mistakes that I made and how I'm going to correct them. I'm going to go out there and have fun and put on a show for the fans.
Did Zach Cummings give you any advice on how to prepare for Omari?
Not really advice on how to prepare. I called him when the fight was offered. He said, take it. He said, you're going to put pressure on him, the pressure I didn't put. And he said, it's a great fight for you. So I trust his judgment. I trust the way coaches trained me for this fight, for his style. But other than that, I don't know nothing about him. He's Russian. He might be cousins with Khabib, potentially. And I'm going to get that victory, and our fight's going to steal the show. So it's going to be great.
You know, in terms of stealing the show, I mean, obviously there's a lot of tremendous fights on this fight card.
Absolutely.
And I know, I believe you're going to be the second fight on the TV prelims on ESPN2. I mean, is it one of those things of like, man, I know, you know, I go out there, I get this knock, and I'm looking for that performance of the night bonus. It might be a long 4 hours for you, just kind of sitting back, making sure someone doesn't one up you.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be crazy fights. But, you know, honestly, if I just go out there and do my thing, have fun doing it, get the fans excited and showcase my skills. You know, if the bonus comes, great. If it doesn't, you know, then at least I impressed myself and hopefully impress the fans. And, you know, I believe it could come, but we'll see, man. You know, like I said, I'm just focused on me doing my thing out there, not worried about rankings or anything, the magnitude of the show, and just going and having fun. The reason why I started, and when I'm having fun, winning's fun. When you have fun, you win. So that's what I plan on doing.
How much of your career would you say that you would call that you weren't having fun?
Mostly the fights I've lost. You know, I put so much pressure on myself, like the fight that was going to get me in the UFC initially when I was fighting Marcus Perez. You know, there was just so much pressure. I was 8-0. It was like, go win this fight. You're going to be in the UFC. It's the LFA title. You know, I was going to be the first one from my gym to win that title. And, you know, I just put all this pressure on myself, and I didn't have fun on fight week. I didn't have fun in the fight. I just went out there and was like, just finish, and ended up getting caught in a stupid submission, and it was terrible. And then the next few fights, I reevaluated everything. I went on a 5-fight win streak with 3 knockouts. So that's me having fun. So I'm getting back to that.
You mentioned about it's a big card. Is there another fight on the card that just, you know, as someone that this is what you do, that it's a fight that you really just want to have the opportunity to sit down and watch?
You know, I'm really just excited to see one of my old training partners, Matt Brown. I'm really excited to see him and see him shine. And Uriah Faber, I'm a huge fan of him. And, you know, and I get to catch up with him almost every fight I'm at. He's always there cornering someone. So I'm excited and honored to be on the card with him. And, you know, the main event's going to be interesting as well. I'm excited to see who's going to win that. My boy Jorge Masvidal is going to be there watching, and hopefully probably get the winner of that. And, you know, it's exciting stuff, man. This is going to be a great week. Vegas is buzzing right now. The tickets are super expensive to get there. You know, a lot of people are going to be there. When Vegas is expensive to be there, that means tons of people are going to be there. So I'm excited.
So I'm guessing that means you've had a bunch of friends hit you up like, hey, man, can I get the hookup on tickets?
Always. Yeah. Yeah. They think like the UFC hooks us up with a bunch of tickets, but they don't really, you know. I said maybe when I'm the BMF champ or got the belt, you know, maybe I'll get a little more status. But for now, they got to find their own way. And I appreciate all their support and what they do to be there and to support me. So it's awesome.
And, of course, everyone's going to be able to watch your fight here, part of the TV prelims on ESPN2, 8 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. Pacific time. Ian, as always, I appreciate time. Of course, let everyone know they can follow you on social media. Anybody else you want to shout out, man?
Yeah, so just follow me on Ian Heinisch MMA. That's my Instagram and my Twitter, Ian the Hurricane Heinisch on Facebook. And just want to give a shout-out to Mark Montoya, Professor Busy, my coaches at Factory X, all my teammates, my trainers at Landau Performance, my media guy, Jordan Kurtz, with Comments of the Peanut Gallery, and just all my sponsors, man. These guys really support me and help me do what I do. Moringa Infusion, Rad Roller, DSR, Virus, Jamie Atlas, Captivation, Relief Massage, Illegal Pete's, Eldorado, Body Check, Restore Health Center, King Apparel, Remax Masters Millennium, Nils Brothers, Bear Falls, and Moringa Infusion. And a huge shout out to my manager, Jason House at Iridium, and all the guys there, Jacob and Lance. And thank you for having me on and always taking care of our guys. I appreciate it.
And there was my conversation with Ian Heinisch. Appreciate him giving some time last week to talk about his fight coming up here on Saturday night. Of course, that'll be a part of the TV prelims as he'll be taking on Omari Akhmedov. And of course, this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Mack Weldon. And Mack Weldon's mission is simple, fellas. It's to make sure all your basics and beyond are simply designed, and shopping for them is easy and convenient. Mack Weldon was founded because they wanted more out of the basics and always question how something is so essential could be such a pain in the ass to buy.
Listen, Mack Weldon is better than whatever you are wearing right now. It's as simple as that. I realized that not too long ago, and I'm so glad I got this awesome hooded sweatshirt from Mack Weldon. I wore it today. It is cold here in the Rio Grande Valley, and I've got it on, and oh man, it's better than whatever I was wearing. It just looks so smooth. It's premium men's essential brand. It believes in smart design and premium fabrics, and Mack Weldon, it's pretty cool because they will be the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants that you will ever wear. I can absolutely vouch for Mack Weldon when it comes to being comfortable. Again, they believe in smart design, premium fabrics, and if you go to their website, MackWeldon.com, you'll see they also believe in simple shopping.
Yeah, the shopping experience is so easy, and their underwear, fellas, whether you're a boxer brief, boxers, briefs, whatever you want to wear, I can tell you they are the most comfortable underwear I've ever worn. Hardware, and you know I don't BS you with that. Just an amazing product that Mack Weldon does have, and simply it's just very convenient with what they do there at MackWeldon.com. And for the MMA Report podcast listener, they're going to give you 20% off your first order. That's right, 20% off your first order. All you got to do is visit MackWeldon.com and enter the promo code MMA Report, MMA REPORT, to get 20% off your first order. Be sure to check out our friends over at Mack Weldon's, which is a great way to show your support for the MMA Report podcast listener, because when you use that promo code, that lets them know that you heard about their product from the MMA Report podcast. But Daniel, the big news at the end of last week was the UFC releasing Liz Carmouche. And this is kind of my general takeaway on this. To me, for me, I'm not like shocked but that they made this move. It's not a surprising move, but the way it was handled was god awful. I mean, you couldn't handle that situation worse than the UFC did. I mean, to me, that is the only thing I will rail on the UFC when it comes to this move. It's how they delivered a message. It's not the fact that they cut Liz Carmouche, which isn't really a shocking move to me, but it's how they did it.
Yeah. I mean, look, I understand the UFC has a lot of fighters, but damn, when you are giving someone their release, it's something where it's a big deal, and you need to be sure that you aren't releasing someone while they are doing PR work for you, especially at a children's hospital, Jason.
Yeah.
So that to me is a big issue. At the end of the day, yes, you have a lot of employees, but you're coming to terms with their release, and it's like you should take a moment, make sure the setting is right, and make sure they don't learn about it while doing a damn PR trip. Yeah. In terms of the reasons why, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear, Jason. I mean, she's incredibly talented, but the reasons why are simple, right?
Oh, no question. I mean, we all saw that fight against Valentina Shevchenko. It was a god-awful fight. We all know that. But to me, you know, you have to also say, okay, why would the UFC want to get rid of, you know, one of the better 125-pound fighters, you know, that are under contract with them? Well, you got to look at the fact of she has gone to the decision 8 times, and that's all since 2013. You know, she had decision loss to Alexis Davis, decision loss against Misha Tate. She had a decision win against Lauren Murphy. She got a split decision win against Caitlin Chookagian. Then she split decision loss against Alexis Davis. Unanimous decision win against Jennifer Maia. Unanimous decision win against Lucia Pulidova. And then, of course, that loss against Shevchenko. I mean, to me, like, I don't, like, in terms of the UFC making this move, I don't have any problems with them moving on. I mean, in the way, she got fitched here. This is kind of what happened. But let me ask you this, Daniel. Liz is what I would consider a fighter that fans like. But let's say the UFC did the same thing to Colby Covington or Greg Hardy. Is the reaction the same?
No. Big N-O. But hey, man, that's life. Life is simple. All right. You have either goodwill, bad will, or no will. If you're someone with a hell of a reputation, you got a lot of goodwill, we'll pull for you and have some empathy. You got some bad will, you're hated, that empathy, well, we'll be short with it. So yeah, if it was one of those two guys, no, we would not have had the reaction that we had with Carmouche's release.
And obviously it's pretty clear she's going to end up in Bellator. And, you know, I think one of the things that'll be interesting is for everyone that did complain about this move is, you know, whenever her Bellator, you know, fight happens, which, I mean, look, she's not, as of doing this podcast, she hasn't signed with Bellator, but we do expect that. But it's going to be one of those things of, well, will you tune in to watch Liz Carmouche fight? I mean, that's a question mark. Then, of course, you know, everyone that knows, you know, her main training partner, and she's a coach of Alima McFarlane, of course, the Bellator 125-pound champion. You know, there was this headline on MMA Junkie that I would flat out just call a clickbait headline. But look, it made me click the article because I wanted to see, you know, why. I think the headline was something along the lines of, you know, if she was, you know, if I lose a title, I want to be to Liz Carmouche or something like that, you know, and it was a very, you know, catchy headline. So, but this was the quote. quote, "I'm not planning on fighting forever. If I'm going to lose the belt, I want it to be against someone who is my mentor and my main training partner and my coach through this entire journey. That's who I would want to lose to. But don't get me wrong, we would totally go out there and try to kill each other. It's not like I'm going to hand it over. People always ask me for my dream fight. I'm like Liz. Hopefully she can come over." So, you know, look, obviously I think that's something Bellator would try to build up to make that fight potentially happen. Liz Carmouche, she has a fighting style that, well, the UFC doesn't love. We both know that, Daniel. It would just be the question of how long would Bellator try to build that up? And then could there be any stumbling blocks that maybe Liz loses to?
Yeah. That headline was awful. When you read the tweet that says, "Eliminate McFarlane hopes Bellator signs Liz Carmouche, quote, I want to lose the belt to her." I mean, yeah, that's just a whole lot of malarkey. I mean, the stumbling blocks could be there. I don't think so, though. I do think Liz Carmouche is going to have just outrageous success in Bellator. It might even have too much success. I mean, for Bellator, they would not want Liz Carmouche to take the title from Aly Malet just because Aly Malet is such a valuable asset to that company. I mean, she's unbelievable, and she's someone who they would like to see as champion for as long as she can hold the strap. Carmouche is going to add a lot of value to that roster in terms of, like, being talented. She's going to add more respect to the division for sure, but it could be dangerous in terms of, like, yeah, she might end up with that championship, and that could be a rough way to lose one of your more marketable fighters. I do think from a skill set standpoint, Liz Carmouche is just one of the better flyweights on the planet right now. And the UFC kind of, did they release a Hall of Famer? I mean, Liz Carmouche will probably find her way in the Hall of Fame.
I mean,
which,
like,
being a part of the first ever UFC.
The first woman to walk into a UFC octagon.
She's a Hall of Famer, and the UFC released her.
You know, but I mean, look, at the end of the day, she went 5-5 in the promotion. But you do understand, you know, I watched her interview with Errol Hawani, and you understand the frustration of, you know, she wanted to fight. You know, she's like, I don't want to fight one or two times a year. I want to fight three or four times a year. And, you know, she kind of noted that, you know, she had some opportunities potentially to go into some grappling fights at the end of the year to put some money into her bank account. But, you know, the UFC kind of, it seems like, was stringing her along, you know. It is one of these stories where we, as we do this podcast, we haven't heard the UFC side of the story. We've heard Liz's side of the story. You know what? You know, there's just a part of me that says, I feel like we don't know all the story. I feel like there's a piece of the story, Daniel, that is maybe doesn't make Liz's team look the best. And look, I could be dead wrong, but I just feel like there's more to this story.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think there certainly could be, but it's hard to theorize what it could be without any more details, you know?
Yeah, I mean, but it's like, the thing is, if you get fired from your job, you're going to put yourself over to your buddies, you know, but it's just, and look, and I certainly could be wrong. And if I'm wrong, we'll talk about it next week on the show. But I just feel like there's another element to this story that we don't know about. You know, one of the things that, you know, I heard it, and maybe I heard it wrong on Ariel's interview, but I believe Ariel had said that the UFC contacted Liz's management on Thursday, and then her management called her on Friday, which maybe the timetable is wrong on that one. But I mean, like, in a day, it's just like the UFC made a business decision here. And I'm not going to fault the UFC for making the decision. Obviously, how they went about that decision, god awful.
Yeah, absolutely awful to do that. It's not a decision I would have made. I'm of the belief that I want just as many talented people as I can, and I will figure out a way to promote them. That would be my view as a promoter, even if they are their own version of a John Fitch. I understand that's a negative. And maybe if I was the promoter, and maybe if I was promoting for a while, I would have more empathy for the UFC and be like, I understand why they're making these choices. And I do understand why they're making these choices. But I would be of the belief to keep as many talented fighters as I can. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you kind of know the ceiling for Carmouche. Her fights are boring. And also, she has an allotment of fights, so you got to think that pay scale is pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, that, I think that's the other aspect of this that you kind of look at it, is maybe, you know, how much of that played into it. And I mean, look, and you mentioned, I mean, it's not like, you know, Liz Carmouche is someone that you look at and you say that, you know, she's a fighter that, you know, people, you know, love her, you know, the striking aspect. I mean, she is a grappler. I mean, that's what she does. You know, so we'll see if there's any, you know, if her style changes in Bellator. But, you know, I mean, I think you kind of know what Liz Carmouche is. But, you know, my thing is look, I have no problem the UFC making this business decision, but obviously how they handled it was extremely awful. Now, there's always things that, you know, come across my Twitter timeline that, you know, I find very interesting. And one of those things I found interesting this week was from an article that came out on Monday by Synopsis Sports, where they interviewed the PFL co-founder Don Davis. And, you know, they asked him, you know, about the lessons of 2019 heading into 2020, moving the ESPN, talked about their international growth, and then what people can expect from the promotion in 2020. Daniel, there is some ridiculous things that is mentioned this. Like, it's one of these articles I almost feel like this is a way to get more investors or get people excited about the PFL. So we kind of thought about, you know, just talking about some of the outrageous things that were said in this article. I'll let you start this one off.
Yeah, we can do like a little draft format. I mean, look, when I read this deal, this just read like a marketing meeting for people who are full of it. Like, there's marketing is one hell of an industry, and it's a great way to make some money if you're good at it. But this is like you're at the sales meeting and you just haven't met your quota all year long, so you had to spin it. And you got really drunk on Sunday and you made these slideshows and these BS statistics. So yeah, we can do a draft. We can go back and forth. I won't go with the most outrageous quote. I'll have a little fun with it. My number one draft pick, I got four picks here, and I think you have a couple too. My first pick is, quote, PFL is the number two most viewed sports program of the week in running every show. They're the number two most viewed sports program in the country of Russia. PFL should have 95% Russian fighters. Granted, they almost do. And they should run every event in Russia. They are so popular that they are the number two most viewed sports program in Russia. I smell BS, Jason. I smell BS.
I did not have that in my list. I'm glad you brought that one up.
Jesus Christ. Every event should be in Moscow.
Okay. All right. My number one pick here. Quote, based on our metrics this year, PFL is the fastest growing new sports league ever.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that was
okay,
on my
list. Okay. What is this metrics you're talking about? I want to see these metrics. And please tell me what you're comparing it to.
Is this being compared to Major League Baseball's first year? I bet they did pretty good. You know, with the, you know, what kind of BS is it's the fastest? Okay, first off, no. Second off, no. God, I mean, I want to see your homework here. I feel like there's none. You can't just make the fastest growing new sports league ever. Really? Really?
I can't believe that was not your number one pick.
No, that is the most outrageous pick, but I was going off the board. But that's just like, shut up. Like, calm down.
All right, you're up now.
If we went to a bar, Jason, and we asked 10 people, what PFL event did you see? All 10 people would tell us they haven't seen one, yet you're the fastest. Get out of here. Get out of town. All right. I'm going to steal this one for you. I know you have it because this is a pet peeve of yours.
Oh, I already know where you're going.
I'm just going to say it and then you can talk about it. This one's a pet peeve of yours. You've been talking about this ever since Scott Coker talks about it with Spike. 100% of PFL fights are available free on ESPN2, which means PFL has the widest distribution of any MMA company. You want to tee it off for me?
I'm just going to ask a simple question. How do I watch ESPN2 if I don't have a cable subscription, a satellite subscription, or some streaming service that has ESPN? That's all I'm asking. Like, I'm waiting for the promoter to defend this comment to me.
Look, man, there are free things in life. Like, yeah, yes, taxpayer dollars pay for, like, free public transportation, like, free, like, parks you can go to. You don't have to spend a dime. You got to spend money for cable. And to say it's free is outrageous. It's literally a subscription, but for your television. All right, what's the quote? Give me another one. See, I only have one more left. Let's see.
Okay, well, let's continue the TV talk. Quote, the PFL TV audience is already 20 to 25% of the UFC TV audience, and PFL is only 1 year compared to 25 years it took the UFC to build that audience.
What? Are you kidding me? What?
Well, first off, the PFL, okay, the initials PFL have only been around for a year, but the promotion has been around for, what, since 2012?
That's true. Jesus Christ, we should have started that off with that. The World Series of Fighting is the PFL. We've had several seasons.
You just rebranded. That's all you did. You changed the name.
Jesus Christ. They're the snake oil salesmen. It's insane.
I'm pretty sure I know what your last pick is.
All right. The lesson of 2019 is that both fans and distribution want more high quality MMA. Okay. So the words high quality is true. We do want more high quality MMA. We want more Nate Diaz versus Jorge Masvidal. That's high quality. PFL does not provide high-quality MMA. It provides a couple good fights per fight card if you're a hardcore fan. The lesson of 2019 is not that we want more MMA. We are drowning in it, Jason. I can feel my triple chin that has developed from my diet of nothing but MMA every single weekend. And if your thought is that the lesson of 2019 is that we need more mixed martial arts cards, you are forgotten. You are mistaken. Are you kidding me, Jason?
I want quality, not quantity.
Yeah, which they did say high quality. They can't provide it.
Okay. Look, no disrespect to PFL fighters. There's only one fighter in the PFL that gets me to the television set.
Yeah, it's Kayla Harris.
Yeah.
I mean, they have plenty of talented fighters.
Like, if you see the poster for the December 31st event, it's Kayla Harrison and every other fighter standing behind her. To me, that's very telling of what they are. I can't believe you didn't bring this one up. And this is the final thing I'll have is not an outrageous statement. My final outrageous statement is this quote: the PFL is now viewed by most as the number two MMA company worldwide, and certainly one on the rise.
I did see. Yeah, I should have put that one down.
Who says PFL is number two?
Is it because they're on ESPN too?
Look, we all know Bellator is the number two mixed martial arts promotion in the world. Let's not kid ourselves. You know, if you want to say worldwide, I don't know if people would put PFL number three. They could be as low as five.
Look, PFL, what were their viewers on ESPN2? Was it like 200,000?
Yeah, 200, 300, yeah, like mid-200s, and I think the most they've gotten is over 300,000.
You can't say you're number two if you get 300,000 views.
No, I mean, look, if you were going to rank the top five mixed martial arts promotions, I'm sure there's a lot of people who will put ONE Championships above them, and I'm sure there's people that might put Ryzen above them.
I mean, look, you could put PFL number three.
I mean, look, like, it's
sure, but it's a clear one too. UFC Bellator.
It's awesome what they're doing in terms of if you win these tournaments, you get $1 million payday. That is awesome. Now, I have no idea how they make money, especially on they do an event on Halloween in Vegas. And they sold 211 tickets. There's promotions in Nevada that sell more than that no one's ever heard of.
I'm pretty sure Combate America sold more than 200 tickets in that.
Hey, man, it looked like they had a good crowd. Okay, I got to ask you, Daniel. You're a Rio Grande Valley resident. Is the Pain Arena in McAllen or Hidalgo?
It's in Hidalgo. I mean, you drive through McAllen to get there, but the Pain Arena is 100% in Hidalgo.
By the way, me and Daniel had this conversation about a week ago because I was like, hey, Daniel, isn't the arena Hidalgo? You're like, yeah, why? I'm like, Presley says McAllen.
That's insane to get the city wrong. I mean, you can't put in Payne Arena McAllen and get there, but yeah, I mean, yeah, to say the Payne Arena is in McAllen is to say Tito Ortiz is the current reigning WWE champion. It's the same thing.
He does have a belt, though.
Yeah, that fight played out exactly how expected.
I watched it after the fact. That was awful. Just all, by the way, and one of the things, and there's been times I'm not going to sit here and claim I've watched any Combate event start to bottom, you know, start to end. You know, I've interviewed fighters who have fought on their cards before and after. And one of the things I've always felt about the commentary of Combate shows is they're typically one sided to one fighter. It was very clear that, Juliana Pena was going for Alberto Del Rio. Did you hear her comment after Tito won?
No, what'd you say?
Mexico still isn't paying for that wall.
Oh my God. That's insane, dude. It's just lame commentary.
It's just, I will say this. I was amazed how many journalists I saw that were live tweeting about this fight. I had, you know, zero interest. And then after, you know, seeing this, you know, fight after the fact, man, if you paying $30 for that, you had to feel bad about yourself. You had to feel bad about yourself because it wasn't competitive at all. You know, you'll see what happens with Tito. I have no idea where Tito goes from here. You know, that was just, you know, we'll, you know, look, I want to see Combate America succeed because ultimately that's going to be what's best for that promotion and fighters. But yeah, man, it'll be interesting to see. But the other thing to mention about this article from the PFL co-founder Don Davis, and I did find it very interesting. It was talking about 2020, where he said 50% of the PFL fighter roster will be upgraded for next season with some surprising major new signings. You know, that is, you know, because that has been a criticism that I've had of the PFL through the first two seasons, is that pretty much it is the same fighters in season two that we saw in season one. So it is very good to see that the PFL is trying to, you know, bring in some new fighters. But, I was thinking about this yesterday or the day before. I really wish PFL could have signed Chris Cyborg. I would love to see her versus Kayla Harrison. God, is it crazy to think that I'd pick Kayla Harrison?
I would pick Cyborg in this fight, Jason. I'm not going to call you crazy.
Feel like she would just judo throw her right to the ground. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know.
I don't know. I want to see that fight, though. I'll tell you that much.
Maybe it's a fight who knows? Maybe they do a co-promotion at one point. But the final thing we want to bring up here on this week's edition of the podcast was last weekend's UFC DC. Rosenstock getting that vicious knockout win with 3 seconds left in the fight, a fight that he was 3 seconds away from losing before he landed that punch. I mean, man, the power he had on that punch to just force Alistair Overeem to have plastic surgery done to repair that lip is crazy. You know, a little bit of a walk-off, which, you know, I tweeted right after the fight. I was like, he might want to be thanking Big Dan for coming in and stop that fight, because what happens if Dan doesn't stop the fight? You lose.
Yeah, yeah. What we learned from Rosenstruck is that boy can take a beating. Overeem hit him with some big shots in those first four rounds. But yeah, he had resolve and he got that late round finish. He set himself up for success. This is a guy, he didn't get an A+ on the test. He got a B-, but damn, he passed the class and now he sets him up for a big fight. But yeah, man, this was one hell of a moment, and a few seconds away from having his, you know, from not winning the fight. But yeah, man, Jerry Rosenstruck, I don't think he's going to challenge for the title next. I think he's got a big money fight ahead of him, though. And I mean, I know he called out Francis Ngannou. I mean, is that a fight you think the UFC will make?
I don't know if they make that right now, but man, if you tell me they're fighting next weekend, oh, hell yeah, I'm tuning in.
I'm tuning in for sure, man. I'm tuning in for sure. I think that's what they make next, just because Stipe and Cormier are tied up. 2 points I want to make about this card. One, man, Marina Rodriguez got screwed. I mean, Cavillo showed up like 4.5 pounds over. That was a big reason why Rodriguez dropped the last round. She looked good. And yeah, to have an opponent
miss weight by that much for a fight at 115 is a huge deal. So I wanted to point that out. And then I thought Dan Mergliotta screwed up big time, convincing Stefan Struve to continue to fight after the low blows. And he got himself TKO'd to tell him stuff like, oh, you're the judges, you won in the fight, which he kind of might not have been. I thought that was a big mistake by the referee there.
I like Big Dan. I've had conversations with Dan in the past. But, yeah, you can't sit there. You know, there's nothing wrong with sitting there and saying, you know, look, I'm taking a point. But, you know, if you tell me right now that you cannot continue, this is going to be a no contest because we have not gotten through 10 minutes of fighting. No problem with that. But the way he relayed that to him, yeah, he should not have done that. You know, it's one of those things of, you know, if Big Dan would have taken a point on the first one, I don't think I would have had a problem with that, you know. And the fact is that while the strikes were not intentional, the fact is it changed the fight. It changed the fight and made Stefan Struve. So, I mean, if you're Ben Rothwell, I mean, you take the win, but you got to understand that, you know, those two kicks played a massive role in why he ultimately, you know, got the win there. You know, of course, this card had two majority draws. Stamen and Song Yudong goes to a majority draw. I talked to Cody earlier this week. That interview's up on themareport.com. You know, he feels it's a win. You know, really, I think it comes down to, you know, how you scored that first round. You know, Cody believes he won all three rounds, but I think for a lot of people, you know, third round, clearly a Cody round. I think for most people are scoring the second round for Song Yudong. So it really comes down to that first round of whether you scored that ultimately a 10-8 round because of the 1 point deduction or not. You got to mention, how about Bryce Mitchell going out there and getting the twister submission? And heard this little fact on this, of course, second twister submission, Big Dan's been the referee in both of them.
Wow, that's interesting there, and a nice win for Bryce Mitchell. And yeah, Big Dan in a lot of the high profile fights.
Not
there
a great night.
Not a great night, but yeah, plenty of respect for him. Just, you know, got to call it how we see it, and I thought that was a mistake.
Yeah, but, you know, fight of the night, Rob Font, Ricky Simon, an excellent fight between those two guys. You know, so a great fight there. Tim Means beats Thiago Alves, so we'll see kind of what happened there. Billy Q getting the win, the triangle choke against Jacob Kilburn is something to also talk about there. And but, yeah, it was I watched the main event live, but everything else I watched via DVR. But yeah, man, that was, I would say this, a funny thing is because, you know, so on game days, I get up about 6:30, you know, and like for a home game, I leave my house at 8 o'clock and I'm at the stadium, you know, 8:20 or 8:30 or so. And so after the first three rounds, I was like, oh man, you know, this is just, Overeem's going to win this fight. And then I'm like, okay, all right, I'm going to stay up one more round. I'm like, okay, well, I've already watched four rounds, so I guess I might as well watch five rounds before calling tonight. Glad I stayed up. But, man, were you like me and just kind of cringing every time you scroll through your Twitter timeline on Sunday and you would see a close-up shot of Overeem's lip?
Yeah, that was grosser than the human centipede, too. That was that was a boom. I mean, that thing was lifted right off, man.
Ugh, that was awful, man.
I feel bad for him. He was so close to just getting a steady unanimous decision win that he got a steady diet to the doctor.
Yeah, and you have to imagine that's, you know, I mean, this was, you felt like this was Overeem's last chance to get to a you know, a title fight, but obviously those days are over. So but yeah, congratulations to Rosenstruck, and we'll see what the UFC does there. But of course, this week in UFC 245, myself and Daniel, we're looking forward to it. Also, be sure to check out our presenting sponsor this week, Mack Weldon. Just go to MackWeldon.com, enter the promo code MMAreport, and they will give you 20% off your first order. That's MackWeldon.com. Use that promo code MMAreport. Is a great way to show your support for this podcast. Another way to show your support for this podcast is leave a rating and review on your favorite podcasting platform, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Google Podcasts, whatever it may be. Be sure to check that out. Also, be sure to hit up the MMAreport.com. got some interviews up there. Coming up tomorrow, Thursday, we'll have my DFS show with MMA fighter Pete Rogers Jr. So we're going to break down UFC 245 from a DFS perspective. Also, going to be posting an interview I did this week with Jesse Finney, the man behind Shamrock FC, as he talked about their event last week. What to expect from 2020. Also, give some updates on some Shamrock fighters. Also, have a conversation with Dylan Tolbert, who is coming off a win there at that Shamrock card. And, of course, already up on the MMAReport.com. I've got two interviews with fighters who are going to be fighting on Friday in Humble, Texas at Fury FC 40. Hear from Ike Villanueva, who's going to be defending his light heavyweight title against Rashad Coulter. Also, you hear from Will Morris. For the Bellator fans, you may say, hey, man, that name sounds familiar. Yeah, his last fight was against Joe Schilling last year, where his corner stopped the fight, so I had a chance to catch up with him. So be sure to check those out on the MMAReport.com or on the MMAReport YouTube channel. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMAReport podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
Looking for studios in the Tampa Bay area to record your podcast? Radio Influence can help. With two studios on either side of the bay, Radio Influence has you covered. Engineered and produced by longtime radio professionals, achieve the excellence in podcasting that you and your listeners deserve. For more information or to schedule studio time, email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. Radio Influence, the future is now.